Popcorn Junkies.
Hello and welcome to Popcorn Junkies. Popcorn. Liking your haircut, Mum.
Thank you, I like yours, Mum.
Oh, this is nice, isn't it? Okay, so what are we reviewing? We are reviewing a film, I'm going to be honest, we're reviewing a film that I wasn't originally going to go and see.
Nor me, Mark.
Were you not?
No.
Oh, right. So it's called The Great Escaper. It stars Michael Caine and Glenda Jackson.
Glenda Jackson,
absolutely. It also stars John Standing. Anyway, so Michael Caine, who is, I think, in and of himself, isn't he 90? He is actually 90, isn't he? I think he is. And of course, Glenda Jackson, this is her last big screen appearance before she tragically died. Earlier this year, right? Or was it last year?
Yeah, I feel they should have put in memory of. Maybe they did.
She was a very unfussy kind of woman. She might have even requested from beyond the grave, don't put in tribute to me. She might have said while filming it, I'm not feeling too well, but for God's sake, don't put in memory of. Anyway. Yeah. So Michael Caine, Glenda Jackson, The Great Escaper. It's based on a true story. It's based on the story of a World War II veteran of D-Day who broke out, escaped from the escaper from his care home in which he was, or his nursing home, in order to celebrate the 70th sort of anniversary of D-Day. A true story by all accounts. I don't remember it.
I remember it.
Yeah. Okay. And so obviously Michael Caine and Glenda Jackson play the couple. They're the couple. They're in a care home together. She obviously needed to go into the care home first, but because he loves her so much,
he went in with her.
He's come and joined us. So you've already kind of got the groundwork of a kind of, a romance as well as everything else. Why wasn't I going to go and see this? I sometimes feel like I so know what I'm going to get from most British films. And that kind of skewed whether I would have chosen to see this at all. What about you?
Yeah, end-of-life films I'm not generally that keen on.
Right.
Probably something to do with my age. I'm also, until this
film... You're a good 20 years younger than Michael Caine.
No, I know. But I'm not... I was never even very keen on Michael Caine. I must be the only person on God's planet.
I think the reason I feel like that is that I often think it's not going to be stimulating in terms of being a cinematic experience.
I don't know any good British films, basically. I can't think of one, although there must be some.
I mean, I think it's because, directors like Ken Loach and Mike Leigh, all those directors that we know, they come from the tradition of television. And it's not that television isn't bad. We love television and good television is a thing. But sometimes I feel like there's a responsibility to do more as soon as you go to the cinema and you're on a big screen. And I often feel, though not always, I often feel that British filmmakers tend to keep things quite small.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that.
Rather than quite large.
I mean, that isn't the case of French, Italian, international film.
Because I went into this thinking, right, you've got to really grab me by the short and curly, smash me about and get me excited about this, because it's going to take a lot for me to enjoy, how long is it, the next sort of almost 2 hours of watching two very old actors, great actors,
shuffling around.
So as it got going, how are you feeling getting into it?
Well, as feeling getting into it was that I thought, this can't go on like this. Thinking, this is boring me to tears.
Wow.
I mean, basically it was a man shuffling along the seafront, sea behind him, walking frame in front of him, wife at home who's constantly bad-tempered, as so many of us women are.
Is that because I have to put up with men, do you think?
Maybe. Men are strange creatures.
They are.
And, so for the first 10 minutes, I wasn't hopeful, maybe even longer than 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And then shots from the back of him, lots of shots from the side of him, welling up, looking at the sea. We knew something momentous was coming, even if we hadn't known what we'd gone into the cinema for, which I doubt there's anybody who doesn't, but we knew it was going to be a war story and that he was thinking all these thoughts.
I mean, it starts with one of those, I mean, I feel you can't get enough of a 50mm prime lens close-up shot of a face, defocused background. It's almost like, why don't we shoot everything like that? And in fact, as I'm sitting here thinking about my film, I think we just will, because it immediately takes you into the face of the man. I think the thing that always throws me, and I think the thing that threw me at the beginning of this, was all those things. There's a lot of Zimmer frame shots, a lot of him with a Zimmer frame, lots of kind of pushchairs, and necessarily your key actors are old and slow, so the pace is old and slow, which is fine. But I think I was a bit surprised and shocked by how frail I found Michael Caine, because although he's 90 and obviously he's getting older, it's always a bit of a shock when you see someone like Michael Caine, because he's a strong bloke.
I know, I thought, I couldn't believe I thought he was acting then, though.
Right.
I couldn't believe he was actually that frail.
Well, that'd be amazing if he was acting that frailty.
No, I know, I mean, I have to say that didn't occur to me, that he was actually that frail. I'd have been more sympathetic, I think.
You see, I think I was a bit thrown, because I think I could see the vestiges of his frailty through his performance, even.
Yeah, no, well...
That was always a bit shocking.
I mean, seeing the whole film, I think you're right. Yeah. I think it's just that I couldn't combine the images of Michael Caine as I know him.
What is your thing about Michael Caine? Are you a fan or?
Not really. This Cockney charm, sort of, which always reminds me of.
You're only supposed to blow the bloody doors off.
That was hysterical. That was utterly hysterical. The film that I liked the best that he was in before this was The Man Who Would Be King. I don't know if you remember that with Sean Connery. And that's when I thought, oh, he can act.
Yeah.
Based on a story by Richard.
He was in another film, though, recently. Can any of you guys tell us what it was, where he played an old man in a retirement home and he had a relationship with a young boy, you know, boy, a younger boy sort of befriended him, and it was really sad. And Maddie loved it. Maddie watches it again every now and then when it was again. If you like old people and you have time for old people, this film is for you, absolutely. This is about an older generation. As we walked out now, you said, will young people see it? And I said, well, I wish they would, but they probably won't.
Yeah.
There is a sense at the beginning of this film of, as I jokingly say to Nan sometimes, we can speed it up from here, because
it's slow.
And this is Glenda Jackson's last performance. She's old.
She's really old.
And whilst
she's very busy.
Very busy. I don't know whether they shot, some films they do shoot sequentially. Obviously, you shoot lots of scenes out of sync.
Shot it sequentially.
I do, because I think she started off not overacting, but I felt she was over amplifying that she could do it.
I think she had to get her ear in over that.
That's exactly what I think she did. Yeah. And then I think once she realised she was in it, she became better and better.
It was
across
a film,
the film
rather than theatre. She'd calmed down.
Yeah, but I think maybe she just wanted to, you know, if you're old and you're very old and you're frail and you've been employed and you've been in the business as long as someone like she has, and she stepped away from acting for a while.
She did.
There will be an element, won't there, of coming onto set, of wanting to prove to everyone that you are this person.
Absolutely.
And I felt what was nice was across the film, you felt her just naturalistically sink into the character.
Yeah, she grew into the part.
She reminded me of Betty so much.
She reminded me of my mom. She reminded me almost of every old lady.
But yeah, busy, that's right. She was great. Her nervous energy, despite it being really old nervous energy. Anyway, so the long and the short of it is, the story is there's this D-Day anniversary celebrations. Michael Caine's character is unsuccessful in getting a ticket. I couldn't work out if they were suggesting that the care home hadn't made the effort. Was that right?
I don't know about that, maybe.
Okay, so he decides to go on his own.
Yeah, he does.
He goes rogue.
I thought what did you think of the care home? I thought that was well done, actually. I mean,
care homes
are badly done.
Yes.
And then it sort of puts you off the whole, all the shots inside and staff and everything. But I thought mainly because of the acting of the main young girl.
I think Danielle Vitalis, I think, is the young girl, the main young girl, played Adele. That was her name,
Adele,
wasn't it?
She was
sensational. Big shout out to Danielle Vitalis. Yeah. I mean, you are really beautiful and tender.
She was there from the beginning to end, and she was really, really added some.
And also, she was there for the younger audience that does come to watch it, because I think she really reminded me of Maddie. You saw through a much younger woman because she was kind of cool, she was hungover, she was kind of irascible, but then you could see her just begin to think, hang on, these older people have had a life.
Yeah.
You know, these people are worth listening to.
Yeah, yeah.
So I love anything that does that. So yes, you're right. I think the care home thing, it didn't feel like a sort of bog standard care home.
No.
So he goes AWOL, doesn't he? He heads off.
He heads off
on a boat, and we get mini flashbacks. He's obviously had a moment at D-Day where he had this moment with a fellow soldier. And he feels he's got survivor's guilt. You know, he's got that thing that I know a lot of people did. I remember an ex of mine's grandfather was the one sole survivor of a tank attack, and he was the tank commander, and only he survived because he wasn't in the tank at the time.
He never
got over it. So
I'm not
we
surprised.
Might all stand here now thinking, really? But this is a thing, you know, I think for people of that generation. So he had survivor's guilt. So we had all these. How did you think it dealt with his introspection and those flashbacks and qualifying, in a sense, his trauma?
Yeah, no. I mean, as it picked up the story and he was on the boat and he meets a friend in John Standing and they sort of get to know each
other. Well, they're
not
a friend, are they? They don't know each other.
No, but he becomes a friend and he becomes like... I thought there was a bit too much introspection on and stuff on his face and looking at his eyes, and which looked very much as if they're going to cry. And by now I was crying a lot.
You don't like that sort of, I see, for me that was working.
It worked for me, but it sort of worked too well in a way. I wasn't prepared to cry from the beginning to the end, which I did.
What I liked about the whole thing, it's an anniversary gathering of D-Day, the D-Day anniversary, and there's all these men all come together. They've all paid their tickets. They're all on a sort of, if you like, a package holiday almost, all going together. A, he's on his own. B, this other guy, played by John Standing, sort of befriends him, takes pity on him. Michael Caine hasn't got much money because he's not part of the package deal. He hasn't got anywhere to stay when he gets over there. And yet he wasn't interested in really becoming part of the whole camaraderie. But I like the fact that he was a sort of... He didn't just want to belong to these people. He'd gone on his own mission.
Oh, no, I like that.
Had his own
mission.
And so his introspection for me marked him out as separate to these other people.
Yeah, no, I get that. And there were loads of things sort of dropped. Maybe I'm going too fast. Loads of things dropped into it, like meeting the German people. That was well done.
That could have been
excruciating, didn't you think?
Yeah. I mean, obviously they were trying to draw a parallel between the fact that, you know, German victims and German soldiers were going through hell in the same way that British soldiers were going through hell. And I thought it was interesting to see Michael Caine try and, you know, that bridging of the cultures, if you like. Nice little touches where, again, relating the veteran experience to more recent veterans, like the young guy that he meets who's got a sort of amputated leg. He meets him later, drunk. Even the guy that's befriended Michael Caine talks about being an alcoholic. So I became increasingly surprised in this film by how it seemed to become grittier and grittier in aspects.
Now, I didn't think those bits should have worked, but they did, didn't they? Surprisingly, I thought.
Why?
Especially the one... Well, because so often in films that are trying to tell one story, and I have to say in British films especially...
Exactly.
They can't do those side issues. And particularly the guy who'd got one leg and was drunk. And I thought that was really well conveyed. Mm. And actually, his alcoholism, because he didn't make you think, I believed him.
So you've got sort of recent veterans, you've got old veterans. Essentially, you've got two veterans, one old, one recent, struggling with alcohol. You've got trauma, and you're right. It's a really good way of describing it that you just said. You don't often get British films that can cope with side issues. We're very bad in films.
Yeah.
It's like this weird thing in the news where if there's one news story, we can't contend with more than one.
No, or more than one point of view.
Or if you talk about another news story, you're somehow passing judgment. It's like, this is ridiculous.
Absolutely.
We're capable of having more. And I thought what was interesting about this film was it was starting to go off. The more this film was on screen, the more it went off into more and more interesting
areas. Yeah, no, absolutely.
Because then, of course, it necessarily goes into the whole existential thing of getting old, being in a couple. The love, there's lots of flashbacks, which you could argue are a bit twee, the flashbacks to when they met.
We did know that, I think we did know, although it was difficult for me to get it all together, but we did know that he was feeling guilt over something. We did know that something bad happened that he kept secret from everybody.
Mm. We were being encouraged to think about what it means to be old, separate to the war, what it means to be in a couple where you've been in love for so many years, all the fears that come with it. We kept thinking, is she going to die? Is he going to die?
Yeah, I kept thinking she was going to die.
Exactly. And then you've got the trauma of war, then you've got the responsibility of surviving, and then you've got that lovely stuff that as you kind of move through the film where he talks about, it's not the truth, nobody's interested in the truth.
Yeah.
And I thought the film, because then he becomes a sort of micro-celebrity inadvertently because he's gone missing.
Yeah, the Great Escaper.
The Great Escaper. And I thought this became the most interesting part of the film for me.
Yeah, they downplayed that, I thought, if that's possible, saying it sounds ridiculous to say that, Subs, because his face is on the front of every newspaper and the TV. But sometimes in films they would have overplayed that and it would have got cheesy, but it didn't. They just played it enough for the wife to see, the home to see, and for him to see as he came off the boat and then left it.
I thought what they were doing was, all those things, but the reason they did it like that was it became also a film, really inadvertently, and I was surprised it became interested in the fraud, if you like, of creating myths.
Yeah.
The fraud of memory, the fraud of nostalgia, the fraud of the anniversary celebration. Because let's not forget, at the end of this, he doesn't go to it.
Yeah.
He doesn't actually go to it.
Yeah.
And so it's a film about actually behind this kind of hullabaloo of kind of celebration and Queen and Obama and medals and flybys and all that kind of stuff. There's the futility of war, but also the private trauma of what he's gone through and what he's been going through and how his private trauma has affected his relationship with his wife.
Yeah.
There's that lovely tender scene towards the end between the two of them, isn't there?
She knew that he was sort of fractured.
Yeah, she described how she felt that if she meant she knew he was holding something back, but if she mentioned something, he was like cut glass, it was going to shatter.
Yeah.
I just thought it was so tender. I thought,
she got better and better, actually, than what I think about it.
And then I went to another level where I thought, where Michael Caine's performance really impressed me. I began to feel, when he pulled up in the car at the care home towards the end and he realises he's got this fame and notoriety and it's not touching the edges of him, and you've got these photographs of him smiling with a fake smile and all these selfies with all these soldiers.
Yeah, it showed you that, didn't
and
it?
And him kind of like being a sort of celebrity and being given things, and suddenly... And as he got out of the car, I thought, you know what? I think he was channeling all of what he believes to be the stupidity of fame that he's had in his life.
Oh, you mean there Michael Caine rather than...
Yeah, Michael Caine, the man. The reason he played that, I thought, so meaningfully, with virtually no dialogue, no script.
Oh, I'm sure you're right.
He just held it. Was he had a sort of healthy old age disregard for all of this nonsense.
Yeah, which it is, of course.
Which, of course, you know he thinks of celebrity and the industry and all this. It's just, it's a job. It just happens to be this kind of job.
Yeah.
And I thought for me it became almost on another level a bit of a commentary on fame.
Yeah.
And how fame has no connection to the truth of a person.
You're right. I mean, that's why, I mean, he had very little dialogue, didn't he? And it was all lying on his face. And that speech where he said, it's nothing of this is true, nothing.
Mm.
Yeah, you're right. That's exactly what was going on.
I think he pitched it perfectly all the way through. This was a classic case of 100 minutes of knowing how to underperform and how to be and just be. And he was. And what he was just sitting in the body of a 90-year-old. He obviously hadn't gone through World War II. I think he went through Korea himself. But he embodied what it means to be just an ordinary old person. And there was that really moving moment at the end, which I don't know what, I'd be fascinated to know what you thought about this, where they talk about, you know, the fraud. There isn't, it does, this is it.
Yeah.
It's old age.
Yeah.
Everyone gets there and everyone comes there. And I felt that that was the shine. You've got two doyens of the cinema, Glenda Jackson and him, sat in an old people's home, essentially saying, forget all the fame and the Oscars and everything else.
Yeah.
It all comes down to this.
Yeah. No, I don't get me wrong. I didn't get sick of the sort of long years on his face as the film took off. It was at the beginning. I think the film, as Glenda Jackson moved into her performance and got her sea legs, so to speak, I think the film did.
Mm.
It seemed more that, and Michael Caine himself did. In fact, it's a universal story.
Right.
And that fame is an illusion. But yeah, no, I mean, I thought it was just a cautionary tale. It was a cautionary tale.
I think this is this for me was a surprisingly successful British film that does have many of the hallmarks of the cliched, slightly saccharine, a bit too cheesy, a lot of the shots a bit predictable. But actually, it's one of those films where Glenda Jackson got better and better and better. He, I felt, was a really strong anchor to the film. I think we also got sidebar stuff about male friendship and how even the physicality between men. There was a really tender shot of him putting his hand on the hand of the German soldier.
Yeah.
You don't see old men do that.
No. And him with John Standing, you sort of felt that, that, you know,
the moments in the shared cabin where he was being sick and then they hugged. And
It was
This film also, curiously, this film also delivers, for me, one of the another new addition to the Michael Caine lexicon of lines of delivery. And he says not only, you know, you're only supposed to blow the bloody doors off. He says, I like you and I don't want nothing awful to happen to you, but you're a fucking mess.
Yeah, you're a fucking mess.
Brilliant. He sort of cut through mental health chit-chat in one fell swoop. And I think this is actually a film about fame.
Yeah,
about. As much as it is about World War II, I think it's about fame.
Yeah, you're right. I hadn't thought that, but now I do. Can one rate a film by how upset one gets? I suppose you can.
Why are you so upset? What upset you the most?
I suppose the thing was that it is the fact that what I'm responding to and crying all the time, he doesn't say that thing about none of this is true until more than halfway through the film, towards the end of the film. But that, in a way, is what I'm responding to, is that we're in a film which is talking about, you know, amazing things that kids have done, that all these lads have done, and it was so dangerous, and you get the things going, you get the planes going over the top, and you think, God, it must have been awful. But awful things are going on all over the world every minute, and it's sort of, we don't have time or the inclination to worry about those boys doing whatever
Israel
they're doing.
And Palestine now,
all of that sort of stuff. So all the sort of stuff of the crying and whatever is death. I'm crying at death, at the fact that he's in a cemetery, he's looking at the waste, the waste of young people.
It's a very powerful drone shot, actually, at that point.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm crying at, because, I mean, were I to get upset by age, I'd be crying all the time, every time I go out.
Did it make you think about Nan and Dad? I mean, it made me think a lot about Nan and Dad.
I mean, there is something so powerful and moving about couples that have been together a long time. And to me, it's sort of, because it's not my life and I can't imagine it, it's sort of so sad, just so sad.
Did it avoid romantic sort of naffness?
Yes.
I think it did, and I think it avoided it because, in a sense, because Glenda Jackson and Michael Caine refused to let it go that way.
Yeah.
I think perhaps with other actors, it could have drifted towards totally saccharine. But actually, I felt very much at times the hand of Michael Caine saying, say this and say that, fuck that and fuck this.
Also, every time it went to the sort of a playback, like going back to the war, and the two leads that they used, the boy and the girl, was so sort of generic looking. I mean, so much. I sort of thought, I'm not going to believe this, but they kept those short.
Yeah, I think they were the least convincing parts for me. The budding of their romance.
Yeah,
I like the idea of watching the sunrise and all that. I mean, it isn't. Look, there are cliche moments. There are corny moments. But what I love, and I think what you want, and
it's
what
more than corniness, definitely.
It's
more than corny.
Oh, yeah, there's much more to it than corny. And I think what you get with Michael Caine and Glenda Jackson is a fierce, granular grounding and grit. And they almost yank it away from it, getting all soppy. It's a bit like Nan when she used to say, don't be so mawkish. They don't want this to be mawkish, these two.
No.
But there is a moment at the end where I think Michael Caine deserves a BAFTA.
Yeah.
He really does. I think he was sensational in this film.
Yeah, no, I do think he
And
was
I think
really
Glenda Jackson deserves a posthumous BAFTA.
BAFTA.
If I think of other films, there was that other film with Charlotte Rampling, where there was a film where they played an old couple in a house and she won everything. If anyone's going to win anything, give it to Michael Caine.
Yeah.
Come on.
No, it's true.
He deserves it. It was a really understated, contemplative, thoughtful, cheeky, and funny.
And heartfelt.
And layered. I was thinking lots of things just from him But that, you know, he has that sort of ability to have a dead eye.
Yeah.
Just dead eyes.
Yeah.
It's like, fuck me, what a dead eye.
Yeah, exactly. And it also made me think that old chestnut, which I always say to people, but is that actors have to be one of the least vain people in society because they're looking at older versions of themselves the whole time, putting it up in the screen, that huge screen. Yeah.
Right, big fat close up.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, I was that, so I was really that, won over by this one.
I was won over. So what would I give it? What would I give it?
Yeah.
76.
Hmm.
And the only reason it's not more is because it is so generically not my type of film. But
everything about this screams out the kind of film I just not would hate, but I wouldn't choose to go and see just because I wouldn't expect to like it.
No,
so I wouldn't then want to come out and just go, oh, I didn't like it, because I know it's there for someone else. So it's one of those films where you don't want to kick it because it's like, oh, I went in and I was really pleasantly surprised and I found it really brilliant. I enjoyed indulging an hour and a half or so in both his and Glenda Jackson's performance. I think it's a bit more his film than it is Glenda's. But it made me think about an awful lot.
Yeah, and me.
So what would I give it? You give it a 76. I think I'd give it 78, 79. Yeah. No. I'm going to give it 79.
Okay, yeah, good for you. Yeah. Go and see it, Steph, and tell us what you think. Mm.